Now we're into it. Is there a way to is there a way to control weight when you have to ingest so much sugar? Seems to me you're almost
short of major liposuction. No, gastric bypass is out because after a gastric bypass you are on a permanent high protein diet. I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So
it sounds like
I'm screwed.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like you almost have to, just reach the conclusion, hey, you can't have everything.
That's basically it. Basically, I'm screwed.
But I can't, I just find it difficult to believe that they can't find an alternative to protein. Or they can't find a way to generate the production of, find a way so that you can process protein. I just can't believe that. Is it because it's so rare that there's not, in other words, if 10 million people had the same circumstance, if 10 million people had what you had, would find it, wouldn't we?
Yeah, well, let me put it this way. This is rare enough that it took 3 years to diagnose me.
Okay. Okay. So you're sitting there listening to Chris talk about all this food and the idea of going back to cultures and societies where nobody ever is sick. And you're sitting
and
there listening to this.
That's wonderful thing to do it.
You're sitting there with a Pepsi in your hand.
Guzzling away,
I think it's, hey, listen, I think it's wonderful. I appreciate so much you sharing this with us.
It's not just my issue. It's people with diabetes. It's people with MS. It's people with who had the misfortune, women who had the misfortune of being in the womb when their mothers took DES. And if you don't think that screws you up, you ought to Google it. It's all sorts of things. Food will impact you enormously, and it can benefit you enormously. But it's not the be-all and end-all of all things.
Okay.
It can't be.
So, in other words, what you're saying, I'm taking some beautiful things that you've said and trying to condense them, but what you're saying is that if you take what Chris talked about literally, you're talking about the fact that many people can do that, but that there are a lot of people who can't.
Yeah, and plus, one thing that he said that scared me, he said that his doctor put him on medication and he walked away from it.
Yeah.
Please, people, don't follow that example.
No, if you do that, you'd be dead.
He got away with it.
Yeah.
You may not.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of those things which says, don't try this at home.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I think what Chris is...
doctor first.
I think what Chris has had is a miracle, and I mean this in a positive way. A wonderful experience where so many things have come together for him and he's sharing it and I appreciate the fact that he's sharing
wonderful.
It because he wants all of us to benefit. Right. Right.
It's wonderful.
Right.
I'm just saying for everybody it's not the answer. I wish it was, but it's not.
Well, if you'll hang on because I'm getting the word here that Chris is going to be back with us. And so he's probably got a few things to say in response.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Sure.
Listen, let me take a very, very short break. It'll be our last break today. And then we come back and we'll get Chris back on the line. Sue, thank you so much. It's a joy to hear from you. Thank you. We're at 44 minutes after the hour. Let's pause and take a quick break. And then we'll come back and we'll hear again from Chris. This is Bill O'Brien on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Harry
Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us there are things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop. Right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
At this moment, more than 800 million people are hungry. Millions more live in poverty. And you wonder, what can I do? Join the thousands of caring people who let Heifer International be their helping hands in the world. Right now, from Appalachia to Zimbabwe, Heifer is helping thousands of families become more self-reliant through the gifts of livestock and learning. Heifer provides farm animals that produce milk, eggs, and other products. That means milk to drink and products like cheese to sell. Having income means families can have better housing and health care, and their children can go to school. And recipients share their success, passing on the gift of their animal offspring to other families in need, ensuring dignity, self-reliance, and hope for the future. Find out how you can make a difference today at heifer.org. That's HEIFER.org.
Back to Dr. Bill, your passport to perspective on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bill O'Brien. We're back at 48 minutes after the hour. And this has been the fastest 2 hours in the last couple of weeks for me, I've got to tell you. It's been wonderful. And we're not done yet. And I say that with anticipation because we've got Chris back on the line. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Dr. Bill. My comments basically have to do with when you look at a culture, and they did at the time, there wasn't a history of any disease. I mean, going back as far as these cultures were at, and these were not just cultures around the world everywhere, because there was death and disease everywhere in the world except in these cultures. So if there wasn't death and disease in these cultures, that's why we look to see what they were eating. And like, let's say to a vitamin A, where we say you should take 5,000 units, they took 50. But they weren't taking any kind of pill. This is the foods they were eating. They ate all kinds of fresh foods, shellfish, things that were high in everything that we think that we don't understand. They also prepared their food to make sure that it was for healthy generations, for healthy babies. So, no, in these cultures, there was no disease that was stronger than them. There was no virus, and there was always viruses. There was no bacteria that could eat them. There was nothing unless they started eating processed foods. And within that is they ate organ meats mostly raw that repaired organs that we have, sort of like cures like. If you could, and they ate them raw. They protected themselves with vitamin C by eating different parts of animals, you know, raw. There's just so much wisdom in each culture doing what they needed to have what it took to be have perfect babies and fabulous health. Mm-hmm. And since each one was so different, but all the same, that's the thing that showed you that there wasn't anything. But as soon as they quit it, I mean, as soon as they quit eating the food that had kept them healthy for centuries and started eating flour, sugar, you know, mm-hmm. canned foods, they started getting sick and dying, and you know, just like the rest of the world.
Right.
But just because you live in a place that doesn't have processed food, it's are you eating the amounts of A, B, A, E, D, C, you know, C, all the different things that you need to keep it so that your body is, you know, the awesome man, woman that you can be, and you know, the rest is like, well, heck, we're way below those levels now, and
yeah.
look what's happened.
Yeah.
That's my rant.
Okay, but so Chris, what you're saying, I'm thinking of what you're saying in light of what Sue said. Sue raised the issue of a virus or a bacteria that would make a healthy person sick, and she admitted that the healthier you are, the more resistant you are. What you're saying is that health and good nutrition has more power against disease, against germs, than anybody thinks that it has. Is that
exactly.
Am I right?
Okay. Oh, totally.
Okay. So it's not
totally.
Just a question of good eating, good nutrition, making you more resistant to disease. What you're saying is it has an incredible resistance to disease to the point that there are whole cultures that don't have it.
Well, I think it was in the 50s that some brothers, I have it written in here somewhere, but anyway, they dealt with 50,000 people with heart disease. And they did it with natural vitamin E from animals. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, basically cured heart disease. And now it's like, oh, no, you don't need that much. No, no, way. You just need a little. Well, no, these people found out that, hey, it cures things outright. And but it's like the doctors say, oh, no, you can't take that much. We have this synthetic, you know, with this research done by, you know, this group that used synthetic vitamin A, E, whatever you want. And they had bad results. You know, so this natural stuff that won't work. You know, it's just a whole bait and switch, snake oil salesman, whatever, to get you to not look at what healthy cultures ate and the amounts and the pictures and the documentation and just sort of like open up the light, you know, open up the door and let the light in, and you know, then watch all these you know doctors scurry away because there's been so much research. On like animal fats being good for you, on mm-hmm. vitamin E, on vitamin A, on you know what we need and what it can do, and you know, like all this stuff just goes away and nobody knows about it, and then you know Procter and Gamble goes out there and tells you you know that their cereals are good for you because they added right. vitamins, but the research says hey the rats died quicker if you ate the product than if you ate the box.
Okay.
So you know who do you believe? The research
yeah.
says hey look at the dead rat. You know, oh, look at the live one. He's eating the box. So, I mean,
Chris,
what
wait,
do you do?
In your view of this, and I admire you for it, where do you put psychology or attitude towards life? And what I'm talking about is there are a lot of people that put as much weight in how we look at life itself as you're putting on nutrition. And I wonder, obviously, you would give that some weight.
Well, I like all life is precious, you know, mm-hmm. and nobody's better than another. And when you look at just like nutrition, well, I'll tell you know it's good for me, but maybe not good for you. It's just life. Life is to be shared and honestly dealt with. I mean, then okay. we can make good decisions, but everything is in such a, it's a national security not to know the truth about anything, and that means our drug companies, you're not supposed to tell the truth about any of those drugs, and you're not supposed right. to let out the results before, you know, they vote on it, and any kind of food that they go out and they say, well, what did you test, and say, oh, no, we can't release that, well, that should be released because it tells you people what's going on,
yeah.
and it doesn't really matter. There's so much evidence that against the stuff that hurts people that nobody looks at, and all the stuff right. that's right there, it says, look what they found. Nobody wants to look at that either. And, I mean, you can't look at TV, and because they're all concerned with the same people of, in the end, you're sick, they take away everything you got. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's just planned.
Okay.
You got ignorance, and you got reinforcement of, you know, advertising the glitter of the good taste of this and that.
Okay. Chris, thank you for calling back. I appreciate it so much. We've got another caller online. We've only got a couple of minutes to go. Thank you so much. Bye now. We're at 55 minutes after the hour. Let's go to our phones. Back again, we have Jim. Hi, Jim.
Good afternoon, Dr. O'Brien. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Reasonably well. I haven't talked to you in quite a while. It was a very interesting
It's been a while. It sure has.
Well,
have
anyway,
you been well?
I just wanted to wish you well and hope that you have a successful academic year that's probably right around the corner for you.
It's been underway for 1 week, Jim, and it's wonderful. Thank you.
Very good. Well, listen.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say hello and wish you well, and I hope you have a very successful academic year for 2007-2008.
Jim, I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have a great week.
Switch off and let the control board take. It's mission, right?
Okay. Listen, Jim, thank you. Good to hear from you, my friend. Bye now. We're at 56 minutes after the hour, and I guess it's time to wind down today's program. Wonderful, wonderful calls. I want to thank you so much, and we touched a number of issues. And of course, this is the classic example of the fact that you try to go where the listeners and the callers take us, and I just think it's just fabulous, and I want to thank everybody, and I've never had the pleasure, and I mean that sincerely, of talking to Andy before or Chris, or and we did talk with Sue before, but she just was fabulous, and all I can see is I know she's there just guzzling her Pepsi, and thank you, Sue. Very, very interesting, because what we ended up in here is an issue that I think is so, so important. There are people, and I'm in the back of my mind, I've got churning this idea, this whole global warming, this climate change issue, and the fact that there are some people that obviously most people believe that we need to address it and we need to study it and we need to deal with it. And then there's this group out there that says, no, we don't. All we need to do is just keep what we're doing and trust that science will fix anything that we screw up. And I think, you know, I think that's a little bit risky. And that's why I kept asking the questions of especially of Chris about science, because what he's basically saying, and I think all of us would agree, that we're not going to see a situation where everybody reverts to eating the way we should. We try. Many of us try. I'm very fortunate to not only have married a wonderful person, but a person who's very, very much into nutrition and good eating and that kind of thing, and I'm blessed for it. I resist because I love the bad stuff, but she keeps me pretty much on the straight and narrow, and I appreciate that. But you know, again, there is a mentality, unfortunately, that exists in our society, which suggests that you just keep doing what you're doing because it feels good, and ultimately you trust that whatever you might do to yourself that's bad, somebody will fix it, or somebody will come up with a pill to solve it, or whatever. It's very obvious that none of that is true. We have reached the end of our day. I can't believe that we're over already, to be very honest with you. It's been a wonderful day. I want to thank you all so very, very much. Thank you for your support of the Head On Radio Network. Please stay tuned to the other programs. This network is desperately needed. I want to thank you for supporting it. I want to thank you for tuning in. Have a wonderful weekend. Be safe. Peace.
Look at Adam. They were passing those things by veto-proof margins, and I'm sitting there going, please let Georgia veto it, please.
And, well, of course, the other thing is what happens when it gets to the Senate.
Well, I know, but like I say, on...
This is the Quality News Network. Near the end of trading this week on Wall Street, the Dow Jones is rallying up more than 140 points. We'll have the latest numbers just before today's close coming up in our business block. The Los Angeles Times reports today that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Marine General Peter Pace, is expected to recommend a large U.S. troop cut to President Bush. Pace may advise a troop reduction of nearly half because keeping more than 100,000 troops in Iraq through the end of next year would be a strain on the military. However, Pace responded today that the article was, quote, speculative. The U.S. military commander in the southeast region of Iraq says it would be a, quote, giant step backward to pull out U.S. troops from the region by the end of the year because the Iraqi forces are not ready. Yesterday, Republican Senator John Warner, just back from a trip to Iraq, said he recommended to President Bush that he start a U.S. troop pullout by Christmas. Also, according to the U.S. military, since the troop surge occurred, the number of Iraqi detainees held by the U.S. in Iraq has gone up by 50%. There are now 24,500 detainees, most of whom are Sunni Arabs. In Afghanistan, three British troops were killed by a bomb dropped from a U.S. fighter plane. They were taking part in a NATO operation against the Taliban. A Marine drill instructor in San Diego has been charged with 225 criminal counts of physically abusing recruits. Two other drill sergeants have also been charged in the case. NFL player Michael Vick filed his plea agreement today in which he admitted to bankrolling a dogfighting ring. However, the Atlanta Falcons quarterback denied that he bet on fights or helped kill pit bull dogs. In Jackson, Mississippi, the elderly Ku Klux Klansman recently convicted of murdering two black teenagers more than four decades. This is the Quality News Network. A U.S. government report on the Iraqi political situation finds that over the next 6 to 12 months, things will become more precarious there. The 10-page National Intelligence Estimate also finds that the Iraqi security forces have not improved enough to act on their own without the help of U.S. forces. A federal appeals court will reconsider its earlier ruling in an enemy combatant case in which the suspect has been held in indefinite military detention in the U.S. The three-judge panel had ruled that military trials don't take away a terrorist suspect's constitutional right to challenge his accusers in court. The Army Secretary today said that deployments that go beyond 15 months, the current limit, put stress on soldiers and their families. Thus, he has ruled out increasing them and said the goal is to move troop deployments back to 12 months. Pakistan's Supreme Court today gave the country's former prime minister permission to return to the country. He had been in exile since 2000 after the military coup that brought General Pervez Musharraf to power. The former prime minister, who is a critic of the current leader, may challenge him politically. Across the Midwest, more than 1,000 people have been displaced by the widespread flooding brought on by recent heavy rain. Ohio has been the hardest hit. Central Mexico is getting heavy rain from what is left of Hurricane Dean. Four people died on the Mexican coast when the storm hit. In Huntington, Utah, rescuers have drilled the sixth and final hole in their search for the six miners who were trapped in a mine collapse on August 6th. A Senate subcommittee that oversees labor issues will call a hearing in September on mine safety. In Brazil, 25 inmates were killed in a prison fire. A police spokesman said some prisoners took control of the facility and reportedly rounded up their gang rivals, then torched the jail cell. Off the Guatemalan coast, U.S. Coast Guard officials say they seized a submarine-like vessel filled with cocaine. There were 5.5 tons of drugs aboard, with a value of more than $350 million. Poet, short story writer, and peace activist Grace Pally has died at the age of 84 in her Vermont home. She described herself as a, quote, combative pacifist. You are listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, coming up next.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have 4 convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our four branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
The FDA wants new regulations on sunscreens. The proposed rules would create a 1-to-4 scale of the highest sun protection. There would also be a new warning about skin cancer and exposure to the sun. A study in the Injury Prevention Journal finds that many recalled toys and other children's products make their way to eBay and other internet sites. Two major airlines, British Airways and Korean Air, were each fined $300 million for price fixing on international flights. The Federal Reserve put $17.25 billion into the financial system today. The latest round of cash infusions occurred in three actions this morning. 30-year fixed-rate mortgage rates are now at their lowest level since the end of May. The average rate is now 6.52%. The CEO of Countrywide, the largest mortgage lender in the country, predicts that the U.S. housing slump will push the economy into a recession. Bank of America just announced that it is infusing $2 billion into Countrywide to help with liquidity. Gold is trading at $668.40 an ounce. Light sweet crude is trading at $69.90 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And taking a look at Wall Street this hour, the Dow Jones is down 32 points at 13,204. The NASDAQ down 15. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to a very special edition of the Inside Scoop, giving you a lot of information the government does not want you to know. You know, of course, that we have 160,000 troops in Iraq, and if you're really savvy, you know that we have another 100,000 or so mercenaries. Private companies hired to do the job that our soldiers, we don't have enough to do or can't do or frankly could do if we had a draft. In any case, we have mercenaries all over the globe, and it's not just the war in Iraq. It's doing spy work. It's doing all kinds of secret things in the shadows that many of us don't know about. My guest today, my very special guest today, her name is R.J. Hillhouse, and she knows a lot about the secret networks that go on around the world. R.J. Hillhouse has run Cuban rum between East and West Berlin, smuggled jewels from the Soviet Union, and brags that she slipped through some of the world's tightest borders. From Uzbekistan to Romania, she's been followed, held at gunpoint, and interrogated. A number of foreign governments have solicited her for recruitment as a spy. She denies that any of them have succeeded. But the St. Louis Post-Dispatch wrote that she's truly like James Bond and Indiana Jones all rolled into one. She's a former professor, a Fulbright Fellow. She earned a PhD at the University of Michigan. She's fluent in several languages. And she's written a book called Outsourced. Now, Outsourced is a novel. It's supposedly fiction talking about the war in Iraq, the war on terror, and all the ways in which the United States government hands over to private companies some of the intelligence functions and military functions that you would think would belong to the CIA and the Army. She says it's fiction, but she also says, with a wink and a nod, that she couldn't write nonfiction on this topic or she would be censored. R.J. Hillhouse, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hello, Mark. Thank you for having me here. Delighted to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. You know, someone rolled into one, James Bond and Indiana Jones, though. It was interesting, one of your interviews, you note that you wouldn't act like James Bond because if he ordered a martini shaken, not stirred, he'd get noticed.
Yeah, you do not want to leave a footprint or a signature item like that. You've got to be the person who blends in, drinking the beer in the corner that nobody notices.
So tell me, I mean, how did you come from this experience? I don't hear an accent from you. You may just be very good at what you do, but running rum between East and West, are you from Eastern Europe?
No, actually, I'm from deep in the Ozarks. I'm a hillbilly, ethnically.
Yeah, no, you sound like an American. That's why I'm wondering, how does an American from Missouri get into East European smuggling? I mean, it's not the kind of career choice most Missourians make.
Generally not. I was a student for over 6 years in East and Western Europe, and at the time I was actually sponsored by the East German government, and I had a stipend in nearly worthless East German marks. And like all the East Germans, I was looking at the glitter of West Berlin, too, and wondering how I could get over there, but how would I pay for myself once I was there? So
you were an American with like a scholarship in East Germany, something like that?
Yes, I've been sponsored by, at that time, it was called the League for Friendship of the People, the USAGDR Friendship Society, which is, of course, a propaganda organization.
And you were there in East Germany for how many years?
I was there off and on for several years. I couldn't really piece it all together.
Okay, so a lot of time. And I know you write the United States.
Moscow and former Soviet Union as well.
You write the United States thought you were a spy for them.
Yes. I've been on watch list because I used to get very special treatment whenever I'd fly back to the U.S. on a U.S. carrier.
Special treatment. Now, you have to describe what you mean by that.
I would go through all kinds of questioning to the point that I would just on both the European side by the airline security and then when going through customs on the U.S. side. So I was always singled out. Got to the point that it became so accustomed to it, I planned an extra 2 hours for that before I went home anytime. Oh, really?
So you're on every watch list imaginable.
Apparently they thought I was working for the Stasi, the East German secret police, because once the Soviet Union still existed, but once the East Germany had fallen, suddenly I quit getting this special treatment, which means apparently the agency got a hold of my file at the Stasi and saw that I never did work for them.
Okay, so you have experience back during the Cold War. All right, we got that.
Yes.
But the world's changed a lot since then, as you know. The Soviet Union's gone. Russia it may be dangerous, but we're mostly focusing on Islamic fundamentalism. What experience, what do you know about the current war on terror or war in Iraq?
I'm very, very knowledgeable about the current way problems within the CIA, currently how they're doing business and the role of private corporations, also the private military corporations. I have worked in researching outsourced with everything from boardroom executives to frontline mercenaries to frontline contract soldiers, to spies, SEALs, just about every creature of the shadows there is.
Now, you do this as a reporter, as a researcher, as an author, just someone that's interested in it. Have you worked for these companies?
No, I haven't worked for any of these companies. I've
so
done it.
This is just your research interest.
In the course of researching outsourced, and I also blog about these issues, the outsourcing of national security, at thespywhobuildme.com.
Thespywhobuildme.com.
Right. So I put my skills to work from networking and finding out things that people really couldn't get to before, which I did at the time in Eastern Europe, because no one could find out anything about the CIA. Obviously, they don't air their own internal issues. And so I put those old skills to use to penetrate the agency and find out what was going on.
Well, let's talk in detail
in order to write this novel.
Let's talk in detail about what's going on, because that's why you're here, and we're happy to have you. In terms of outsourcing, let's start with the CIA. I mean, how much outsourcing is done? When we think of the CIA spying on people around the globe with spies or with surveillance, we think of mostly CIA agents. But I think what you're saying is there are a lot of people that are contracted out to do this kind of work.
The actual field work, boots on the ground, you're going to find that the majority of that is done by private corporations.
The majority of it.
The majority.
Done by private corporations.
Now, I write conservatively. I write only the National Clandestine Service, but it's really throughout the agency. And conservatively, I write it's over 50%. But many people I've talked to say it is closer to 70% of the National Clandestine Service that has been outsourced.
Now, when I think about what CIA activities are and sort of what's come out in public and what we sort of think of as a spy agency, I certainly think of CIA people approaching some, say, Pakistani or Afghani or local citizen of Iraq on the ground and saying, hey, we'll give you money if you tell us what's going on. That's not what you're talking about. You're talking about America.
That's what I'm talking about. Absolutely. The private corporations are running agents. They are collecting intelligence both through like the NSA, what we see the data mining that's going on, as well as through the CIA in doing exactly what you said, providing private case officers who are running agents.
So now, again, the most famous would be Blackwater, Halliburton, Kellogg Brown Root. I assume those are the main ones.
Actually, none of those are not doing any of this work. Those are
really?
Doing private military. Blackwater does private military work. It doesn't, which is the soldiers on the ground. But they're not doing the actual intelligence work. The intel work is being done by corporations, some of the big ones, such as Booz Allen Hamilton, SAIC, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, many of the big defense contractors. There are involved in smaller shops that are run by former CIA case officers, such as Abraxas, Spectal. Others would include Northrop Grumman.
Well, that's interesting because all of these agencies, well, I don't know about all of them, but a number of them that you name, Raytheon, Lockheed, Northrop Grumman, these are all defense contractors with huge amounts, billions, tens of billions of dollars, probably hundreds of billions of dollars, in contracts with the U.S. government to sell them all kinds of weapon systems. And
yes.
So if they're running our intelligence programs, I would think they would have an incentive to argue that some threat is very dangerous, or perhaps I could imagine Northrop Grumman saying the nature of this threat is such that only the X-25 special kill Martian factor machine is exactly what you need, because after all, our intelligence tells you have to buy our products. Is there a conflict of interest there?
Yeah, well, let's hope they're a little more sophisticated than that, and I believe that.
Obviously, I mean, I'm talking about something, I'm making it up,
yes.
But
right,
I assume...
Right, you hit the absolutely what I'm very concerned about, because these are the big defense contractors. They obviously have a vested interest in certain weapon systems being funded, and now we've come full circle that they're not only providing the weapons to respond to threats, they're not only actually running many of the weapons in the field, in the theater, responding to threats, but now they're gathering and analyzing the intelligence that leads to identification of the threat.
So tell me specifically what they do. They're taking data from emails, from satellites, from private spies, too. Tell me exactly what they are doing for
us. It would include all of the above that you just named. It depends on what different companies are doing for different agencies. You know, the NSA, for example, the National Security Agency, which is has been implicated in the domestic spying and listens to conversations of targeted suspects abroad. Most of it, the majority of its work, is done by private corporations. In fact, the government doesn't even have the capacity at this point to be able to sift through and sort through the various databases, compensation, the pattern analysis that's going on, all the traffic analysis, that's all being performed by private corporations.
It's interesting because
NSA is so outsourced that its administration is even outsourced. Contractors run contractors in this new world. And this isn't the fiction of outsourced. This is the reality of today's America.
Well, that's what's so scary to me, because one of the things that when I talk about surveillance, and we've talked about it a lot on the Inside Scoop, and I have a number of listeners that are worried, and I said, look, yeah, they're spying on all of us, but don't worry. I know the government doesn't have enough people to listen in to every phone call and the trillions of emails that are sent daily. But I guess if you contract it out to a number of private corporations, they can watch most of us. Let me ask you this. McConnell said today, that there were only 100 domestic phone calls or so that they were watching. They were actually watching thousands of foreign stuff, but only 100 or so. That just sounds unbelievable. I don't believe him, but I can't prove it. I mean, do you have any information on that?
I don't have any information on it, but I can tell you about the way some of the things work. It wouldn't surprise me if he's completely telling the truth with it, because you're absolutely right, they don't have enough people to listen in to all the phone calls. But what they do have the technology to do is to keep a record of all patterns of phone calls and patterns of email contacts, and be able to do analyses of these patterns to see who is linked to whom.
But it seems to be a strange science. I mean, you know, you check everybody's emails, and I sort of imagine in an unsophisticated fashion, you know, they look for the word bomb, and you know, and then so someone says she's the bomb, and suddenly they think you're a terrorist. I mean, the carnivore program, for example, is supposed to use certain words. How much are they actually following terrorists, and how much is this false positives where they're following ordinary citizens?
Well, they're doing their best because there's such volume out there. They're doing their best to follow terrorist suspects and to try to keep the country safe and to get it as targeted as they can. And in order, they'd be wasting their time and totally missing the target if they were if they didn't have it as honed as possible. So in that sense, I don't think they're looking for people who say, "Ah, she's the bomb."
Okay, but the main problem is of course who are they accountable to? If Raytheon, I assume, has every incentive to tell the government, we're succeeding very well, we caught 28 terrorists or 200 terrorists, whatever it is, whether they are or they aren't, because if they don't, they won't get another contract. Is that fair?
Well, not necessarily the way it works everywhere. I mean, I heard a recent story in the Pentagon of where Booz Allen Hamilton had a contract, totally screwed it up, and that same agency in the Pentagon hired him back for a similar project.
For a similar project. Tell me how they screwed it up. I'm curious.
I can't go into the details on that one.
Oh, okay.
But you can't. But it is, there are very few giant players in this that control everything. And that's how the whole contracting is set up. And they feel like they often can't work without those.
Okay, well, let's go through the details.
The Associate Director of National Intelligence said in response to my Washington Post article that he admitted that they can't spy with and they can't do their job without contractors.
So let's get some specifics that you can tell us about. You know, I know you write an incredible – by the way, your book has been very highly reviewed, and I recommend it to everyone. You can get it at Amazon. There's a link from my website, and there's a number of very positive reviews. Just frankly, as a work of fiction, much less as a work of carefully concealed fact. But tell us some stories that are factual, that are not fictional, that you can tell us about versus how private corporations are conducting surveillance.
That's getting a little bit too specific for how they're conducting. I mean, I'm not privy to how any of the domestic surveillance would be functioning.
Well, I mean, part of it, I mean, a lot of us can sort of guess at. I mean, data mining, for example. I assume they have access to servers that push everybody's email around.
Yeah, I assume something like that goes on. I mean, my assumption would be that the actual data, the telephone companies, is warehoused with private corporations by giving, so it's handed out to private corporations, so it doesn't fall under the regulations that affect telecommunications companies that would prevent this type of thing going on. And the data warehouse companies, well, they don't have those same restrictions, and so they can't look for various patterns and links among phone companies. And I assume there's probably something similar with email, but I really don't know.
RJ, let me just get to the heart of this. You've written in fiction because I think you're concerned about writing some of this as fact. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I'm very concerned about writing some things like the role of private corporate. I wouldn't write as fact at this point the role of private corporations in running the black sites, for example. But I'm quite comfortable in discussing that in fiction.
The blog sites?
The black sites.
The black
secret
sites. What's
CIA,
the black
the secret
sites?
CIA prisons that President Bush said we no longer had any detainees in a year ago this month, or I think that was in September. Which was,
are you afraid you'd be prosecuted if you gave details?
I was just that very uncomfortable in going into this any further.
Because you don't want to give
I'm happy
the
to
terrorists
talk about the specifics.
Okay, no, I'm just trying to figure out, that's fine. I'm just trying to figure out why. Is it because you don't want to tell terrorists how we're doing things? Is that fair?
Oh, there's no danger whatsoever. It's not going to affect national security. Whether terrorists would know that it's private corporations that are going to hold them, where they're getting questioned by special interrogation methods, or whether it's the U.S. government that's doing it. I don't think that affects national security at all.
So if it doesn't affect national security, why the reluctance?
I'm really not going to go into the details of that.
You don't have to go into the details. I was just trying to figure out what was holding you back, whether it was fear of prosecution or things like that. I mean, I know you can't leak certain things. That is against the law. Let's go back, though, then to the private corporations, which are doing most of this work. They are accountable to their CEOs and their shareholders, I assume.
Yes, correct.
And their CEOs, do they have security clearances?
Oh, yeah. A large portion, or most everyone in some of the corporations, have security clearances. and they're accountable. Of course, they're accountable to the U.S. government in the sense that they have a contract, and if they want follow-on contracts, they have to do a decent job with it. But they are also conflicts of interest because, exactly as you said, they are accountable to their shareholders, and they're accountable to the owners of the corporation. And so there are times where I'm sure there are going to be conflicts of interest, particularly because these serve other clients. Many of them have corporate clients. Many of them have, as clients, foreign governments.
How much congressional oversight is there over these mercenaries?
Not enough, very clearly. I mean, there are some real issues that Congress needs to take up, such as products of private corporations, analytical products, and what private corporations gather on the ground are incorporated into the president's daily brief. Our most important, most sensitive national security document that really runs the national security agenda that the president's briefed on every morning. And those products are never differentiated as coming from different corporations, but are...
So the president doesn't even know that it's CIA or a mercenary that found the information?
Whether it's CIA or someone working for Raytheon or Lockheed or Abraxas or elsewhere, there's no way to differentiate because that daily brief comes to him with the seal of the direct national intelligence. Whereas if they're really going to be honest about it, it should look more like NASCAR. Corporate
like NASCAR.
Yeah. You know, you've got the different, you have Spectel, you've got Abraxas seal, you've got the corporate logo from...
So you know where this stuff is coming from.
So you at least know where it's coming from. Because at this point, it is treated as this is the work product of the U.S. government, which it is indirectly in that the U.S. government signs off on it in the end, it contracts for it. But they can't really tell where it's all coming from. And at this point, there's no way to see if someone is trying to, let's say, tweak the national intelligence agenda, which these companies are spanning, or most of them are spanning the agencies throughout the intelligence community. So there is the potential there to plant things or to emphasize different things in the direction that you would want it to and move the national security agenda.
I've had a number
and
of
Congress
veterans...
is not looking into how can we fix this. Because there's some very... The tools are there. I mean, the type of stuff they use for some of the surveillance, traffic analysis patterns used in counterintelligence and in counterterrorism could actually be applied.
Well, I've had a number of American veterans of the Iraq War come back, and many of them complained about the contractors. They said, you know, we did the job they did, only we did it for about a fifth the cost. You know, they would pay them $300,000, and they'd pay us $60,000. And frankly, we worked harder, and we followed orders, and they would get in trouble. They would go off in Fallujah on their own mission, and then we'd have to send, you know, thousands of troops to defend them. So the troops were saying, hey, we could have done this exact same thing for much cheaper cost. And that's, I guess, the heart of my question. Can't we hire CIA agents and American military to do these exact jobs for less cost and more accountability?
We could definitely do it for more accountability, but the problem is that the CIA is in a personnel crisis right now. They're not able to do it. They have lost so many staff, and they have such high turnover, they're not able to pull this back into house. That's going to be the big challenge facing the next 5 to 7 years, and it's not clear if they're going to be able to do it. Once the outsourcing started, and it started for good reasons, actually, as a quick response to 9/11, but once they found that people could be paid up to twice the amount in the private sector as they were making working for the U.S. government, there was a big spy drain, and the most competent people really left the agency, except some people right before retirement, very good people, stayed on. And all the middle level and the entry level have been decimated. Over half of the U.S. government employees of the CIA right now have less than 5 years' experience. And within
what you're saying is that because we pay these mercenaries twice as much or three times as much as we pay a CIA agent, or in the military context, we pay Blackwater two or three times what we pay a soldier on the ground, that Americans are saying, why should I work for the CIA when I can work for Blackwater and make two or three times the same money and do the same job?
Yeah, the different companies involved, but more or less that's part of the problem. And also because of some of the personnel problems within the agency, having to follow overall civil service, or not civil service, follow U.S. government personnel policies, have led some great frustrations, too, and they're not being the adequate compensation and promotion. market rate within the government, so people look at it like, why should I go work for them and have some of these bureaucratic hoops and office politics to deal with that you're protected from within the private corporations?
So wouldn't the answer be, in the case of the CIA, for example, to up the salaries for agents and to decrease the payments to the mercenaries so that we pay the mercenary exactly the same that we pay a CIA agent, and that would stop the drain and get more people into the accountable portion of our government and less into the unaccountable private sector? Is that fair?
Well, it's a lot more complex than that, because we're at war right now, and we're at war on multiple fronts. So the need is there, and things can't get disrupted at that level. If you start cutting salaries, cutting people out of the private sector, and they follow, you know, they have the various payment schedules, GS schedules, as to what people would be paid at various levels and when promotions and promotion reviews occur. So there's not that flexibility to be able to reward people market salaries, at least within current personnel policies.
I want to take a break. They did attempt
to put a ceiling on the amount that people could earn. I think it's $130,000, $135,000 now in the private sector.
I want to turn the show over to our callers. First, we're going to take a break and give folks a chance to call in. This is a once-in-a-lifetime guest, folks, so please take advantage of her. The toll-free number is 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. You'll be right back with R.J. Hillhouse, the author of Outsourced, right after this.
Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush Administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says, the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap.
There's nothing here. Nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, the 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes.
Somebody's trying to make me stay, you know I've got to be moving on.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknight, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? one that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. My guest is R.J. Hillhouse. She is the author of Outsourced. It is a fictional novel that talks about the war on terror and the various mercenaries we've hired to fight it, although she writes that there are many things she can say in fiction that she can't talk about publicly. She also writes in her materials that CIA and Pentagon contacts both warned her about the dangers of writing this book. They are worried about her safety, that the warnings came both when she started the book and after they'd read it. And there are those inside and outside of the government, she writes, who would like to keep certain activities very quiet. She also writes she's been dealing with some rough crowds while researching the books, particularly the mercenaries. She's been threatened. So this is quite a guest for you. Let's go to Sarge in Mississippi. Sarge, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Well, hello, Mark. It's not quite Mississippi anymore. It's Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, okay. Sarge has moved to Arizona. Fair enough. Go ahead, Sarge. What's your question for my guest?
Yeah, I am very aware of the different aspects of Blackwater USA and, well, Blackwater, period. The money that they must be making must be extraordinary. I know in just the New Orleans and Mississippi Gulf Coast, they turn up all over the place there doing security. What would you advise citizens to do to keep these people out of the areas?
RJ?
In the case of New Orleans, I think it was because part of the disaster response, and that has to do with the government, the state governments allowing that to occur. And I believe they entered into an agreement in California for possible disaster response. So if one doesn't want them to be involved and to try to maintain order in whatever fashion it is, that would have to be worked out with lobbying the state government to prevent it from occurring.
So someplace like Mississippi, forget it, where the powers that be are just going to make money off of it no matter what.
Right, so I'm not sure that much could be done in that case. And how lucrative the golf course contract, I think those are probably more lucrative than some of what's going on in Iraq. It varies, of course, contract to contract.
Well,
RJ, who
you,
decides?
It's pretty messy down there. Mark,
RJ, who decides?
I'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Sarge, for your call. RJ, who decides who gets the contract, how much the contract is worth? I mean, if Congress isn't doing oversight, are these bureaucrats in the Pentagon or in the CIA that are making these decisions, or does it go up higher?
That's a really interesting comment, particularly in light of the news this week that the Pentagon is going to be, the Defense Intelligence Agency, is going to be outsourcing over $1 billion of intelligence services, including the collection and analysis and all the things that we've been talking about. And they said they expect to give this $1 billion award to five or more contractors. Well, that means that they're going to run it in the way that they generally do these giant contracts, which is called an IDIQ, an indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contract, which means that they put to meet the letter of the law of the federal acquisitions or the federal administrative regulations, they put it out for bid that they want these very broad services done over sometime over 5 year, the next 5 year period, and they are looking for places to do it, and they award to the big players, as they said, the big guys, to Booz Allen Hamilton, to Raytheon, to Lockheed, to Cytor, and SAIC. And they, each of these companies, and the small guys involved, have to line up behind one of the big prime contractors in order to have a shot at any of the work.
So now, these contractors, I assume, they give a lot of money in lobbying to these same politicians.
Oh, of course. Yeah, they give it to politicians, and they're in there lobbying everywhere that is possible to lobby within legal limits, or at least we hope within legal limits.
So
what
let me ask
is
you this.
They award things to the big guys, and the small guys have to be lined up behind them. But the really interesting thing is these proposals do not have the specific services that they want people to work on specific projects. But once the awards are made, all these companies flock to their contacts within, and soon be defense intelligence or in other case, similar case, CIA or others, with proposals of what it is that the agency really needed to have, and how their company can meet those needs, and how easy it is to contract it through these newly available funds. So in many ways, we get the tail wagging the dog. The companies are telling the Pentagon, the companies are telling the CIA, the Office of Director of National Intelligence, what their intelligence needs are and how they can meet them.
So the companies say, hey, we need billions of dollars. America needs this kind of intelligence. Hand over the money.
Right. Look, we've got this really neat product. We know you got a problem with, are your spies, are your agents that you're running on the ground in, let's say in Iran, are they reliable or not? You know, are you talking to, do you have some, you know, it's hard to keep track from all these guys. We can tell, we can help use our pattern analysis here to be able to see and keep you from going to the wrong people that we already have some flags on or other things. And look, you can get this solved for only whatever, $10 million, or it appears to be.
But
here's the
pinnacle,
more or less fine here.
I would think spying, though, is as much of an art or even more of an art than a science. I mean, you know, to say whether someone's telling the truth or not, I mean, I realize that there's things like lie detectors, and I'm not even sure these truth serums work, but at the end of the day, a company is saying, we can analyze the chess pieces better than you can and therefore tell who's telling the truth, but I don't know that they can, right? I mean, this is, I don't know that there's no
pattern.
Magic.
Right, you're looking for patterns as to who is known for contact with whom, you know, who that person's been associated with. You're looking for the history of the person, the history of, you know, how well their intel has worked, or, and various things like that. So, you know, you're looking at a lot of different factors, and you're trying to collate that. That's just for this example. And so then they take it to their contracting officer, technical rep, and they say, look, here's what you need. Isn't this cool? You can use this in your branch. We can make you look really good. And this helps meet your need, contract for it. And so so the companies are really in many ways starting to call the shots in the CIA. We're already seeing that go on in the Pentagon. It's what goes on with the Air Force, you know, and the big contractors saying, here's the weapon system you need. Look, we've got all the specs here. This is the coolest thing, and it'll solve all your needs. And
kind of
that's the type
hard
of
to
thing
know.
That's going on.
It's kind of hard to know who's in charge sometimes. Malin from New Jersey, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
I was just a little concerned with the it seems though they have something which is political immunity or something thereof. Is that correct?
Great question. Is there immunity for these contractors if they were to, you know, not follow orders? I know, for example, the four guys from Blackwater, I think it was Blackwater, that went to Fallujah and started a whole, you know, new battle in the war of Iraq. Is there immunity if these guys spy on the wrong people, or, you know, breach national security, or, you know, go and do things that they're not ordered to do? Are they protected, or can someone